8 days a week. I love you. It's day 8 of our audio advent calendar. Hello!
Hello.
I'm Ferg.
I'm Heather. And you might be able to hear the newest new old friend gurgling away in the background.
Gurgle, gurgle.
Are you going to gurgle?
No, she's gone. She's gone shy.
You decided to be quiet then. Welcome back to comedy Whodunits for Your Ears, Crimes, Clues and Christmas.
Peter Archridge, the hero of Crimes Against Christmas, is on another case. But is he being distracted by the latest suspect he's met?
I love that Jimmy McMichael's back. Always nice to see old friends.
And if you want to see new old friends, a reminder, tickets are on sale for A Christmas Getaway at Theatre or Bath Studio this December and January. Then next spring, Crimes Camera Action will be touring the country.
Nice link.
Thank you. Quiz.
Hashtag NOF quiz. Question 8. What are the two main ingredients of a whiskey mac?
Love our whiskey mac. Now, on with the story. Crimes, clues, and Christmas. Ding, ding.
Crimes, Clues, and Christmas. Chapter 8.
Chaz strolled into the Duke of Courland with a huge bag over one shoulder, which she dumped by the side of the table. She took a look at the pint in front of me and didn't flinch.
What's that? I'm game. Barman, another one of these, please, and two ploughman's lunches.
She shouted over her shoulder as she sat down. Then she turned back to me.
I'm assuming Rawlings is paying your expenses and all this is covered, yeah?
I still wasn't entirely sure if I was doing this as a favour to my club's chairman or not, but either way, I was happy to pay for lunch with Miss McConstance, and so nodded my assent. Jimmy Whitmickle was over the moon. He punched the air. Or he tried to. He appeared to momentarily forget his height and ended up punching the ceiling.
Yes, Archridge, it's already working! Ow!
He recovered himself and hurried over to the table with a pint of his sacred cider. He plonked it down onto a beer mat, and I swear, the little bit that leapt out onto the table wriggled itself to the edge before plummeting to the floor. Chaz was undaunted and took a hearty swig.
Phew, that is some strong stuff. Lovely, thank you.
This woman is a conwazzer, Archridge. Get a ring on her finger before I do, son. Drinks are on the house.
A cheer went up around the pub.
Drinks is on the house if you're drinking my cider.
He quickly corrected himself. And the cheers turned to jeers as he went back to the bar. You don't have to drink that, you know, I said conspiratorially. Jimmy's an old friend. I like to humour him. Chaz took another swig of her drink.
No, I like it. It's good to see a man who likes his drink with a bit of heart to them. Bodes well. Can't stand all these scotch and soda or gimlet types.
I made a quick decision, putting my heart and one other organ. Is it an organ? Anyway, above my liver, kidneys and tongue, and raised my glass in a toast.
Yes, delicious.
I can't stand the smooth, rich nectar of an aged whiskey or the perfectly balanced flavours of a gimlet. Give me something that tastes like the smell of a farmer mucking his fields and feels like a bull has charged your chest any day of the week. Then I drained a goodly portion of my own pint. I managed to keep a straight face for at least 30 seconds, which was something of a personal best, before I started spluttering like a child dragged out of a pond.
You don't like the cider, do you, Mr. Archridge?
My astute lunch companion observed. Like might be stretching it a bit. I can see that it has, you know, its uses, if one isn't ethically opposed to chemical warfare or the like.
Well, don't waste it.
She made to grab my drink, but I protested. No. It may eviscerate my taste buds and leave me numb to the finer things in life, but Jimmy McMichael is a chum and I won't hurt his feelings. Chaz took a ruminative pull on her drink and considered me over the brim of her glass. She stayed like that for some seconds, before smacking her lips together, evidently having made up her mind.
Okay, because you're trying to be a good friend, I'll let you off the hook. Hang on.
She turned back around in her seat and in a sweet voice said,
Jimmy, I'm so sorry. I think your delicious booze is just a bit too much for my gentle female tongue. Do you think you could mix me up a gimlet, perhaps?
Here she turned back to me with a teasing smile.
You know, something a bit less manly and strong.
Course I can, my darling. I'll bring it over now, then fetch your lunches.
I squirmed a little in my chair when Chaz swapped our drinks over after Jimmy had left, but one sip of the cocktail and a bit of cheese and bread restored my equilibrium nicely. Chaz was making short work of the food on her side, laying into it with gusto.
You'll have to excuse me troughing like this. When we're opening a show, I don't get much time to eat, so have to make the most of any chance I get. Don't stand on ceremony. Ask your questions while I get this down me.
Again, I was struck by the contrast between Daisy or Marlena and Chaz. I couldn't see either of them wolfing down food, as if in fear an actual wolf was lurking somewhere ready to steal it from them. I imagine they would have ordered something leafy and insubstantial, and then simply pushed the greenery around their plates for a while, hoping to achieve sustenance by proximity only. Not so Chaz McConstance. She was clearly a woman sampling all the earthy delights this life has to offer. Well, look, it's no secret. I'm looking into the disappearance, the theft, of the jewels worn by the Prima in the show, and if you have any information, then I'd love to know about it.
Information? You're not going to ask me whether I did it?
She asked with all the tact of a right hook to the chin.
If you did it, did you?
No, of course not. If I'd have done it, I'd have swapped them out for the fake ones, and none of the idiots back there would have had a clue.
Idiots? You don't like your colleagues, then?
I love them. We're family. It doesn't mean I don't think they're idiots, though. Idiots for demanding such expensive jewellery in a show. Idiots for giving in to the demands. Idiots for keeping them in the safe with the combination on top. And idiots for stealing them and thinking that they'd get away with it. Idiots. But idiots who I love.
She punctuated her tirade by draining the first of her pints.
I see.
What are your thoughts on Rudy? Chaz had interrupted my interview with Rudy, just as he was about to tell me something to do with whoever was bleeding him dry, and I was keen to know more.
Rudy? He's a hell of a dancer. So good he's just about worth all the commotion he causes. He thinks he manages to keep all his little dalliances secret, but Dot and I are just working overtime soothing all the broken hearts he's leaving in his wake. Of course he drops them one minute and then they're distraught. Then he picks them up again a week later and they forget all about the pain in an instant. Like I say, idiots.
What do you know about his money troubles?
If he's in money trouble, it's his own fault. He gets paid more than half the company put together. Poor Daisy is doing all this extra work and she doesn't get a penny more. I'd not blame her if she saw an opportunity to get paid what she was owed.
You don't think Daisy Love could be the thief, do you? She's so sweet.
She's a performer, Mr. Artridge. Pretending is what she does. You don't become prima at a company like this without pulling a move or two. Look at Marlena.
Now there's a dancer I could see stealing the jewels.
But why she'd need to, I have no idea. She's been gifted jewels like that hundreds of times by love-struck princes and lords all over the globe.
Chaz was just mopping up the remaining bits of chutney on her plate with a hunk of bread, leaving the dish impressively cleaner than it arrived. Sadly, though, any progress I thought I'd made on the case was similarly wiped clean. I'd no better clue who'd done the deed than when I arrived yesterday morning. So who do you think did it then? I asked with a sigh.
I've told you. Daisy Love.
Really?
Yep. She's the only one with motive, opportunity and means. That's what they say in the detective stories, isn't it? Motive, opportunity and means.
I don't read much detective fiction. I prefer the classics, the morning papers and the racing form. So I hedged my answer. Yes, yes, yes. When in doubt, look for Mom.
Look for Mum? What does your mother have to do with it?
No, M-O-M, Mom.
Like an American mum.
Means, opportunity, motive. M-O-M, Mom. I was exasperated, but Chaz simply threw her head back and laughed.
I know, I'm pulling your leg, Artridge. Wow, you're wound tight, aren't you? I need to be getting back. Finish your lunch, enjoy your gimlet, and when you get back, I'd take a look in Daisy Love's dressing room if I were you. See you around.
She pushed her chair back, stood up, and leaned over the table to plant a peck on my cheek. Then she hoiked her bulging bag over her shoulder and bustled out through the door, leaving me alone with half a plate of food and a head full of half-formed thoughts. Why was I so certain Daisy Love couldn't be the thief? She knew where the jewels were, she was openly underpaid, and she was right there the night they went missing. I should have learned from my encounter with Michelle McLaughlin that a young slip of a girl can be every bit as formidable as any hulking man. I resolved to follow Miss McConstance's advice and headed back to the theatre to take a look around Daisy's dressing room. The full company were still engaged with more rehearsals on the stage when I returned, so I was able to stroll backstage without interruption. However, as I made my way along the corridor, I bumped into Marlena, the former prima. She wasn't in the evening wear I'd seen her in last night, now wearing a simple black leotard and a floating blue practice skirt, but her hair was still plastered to her skull.
Oh, hello, Mr. Artridge. Do you need to interview with me? I am a little busy right now. Can we talk later?
I was more than happy not to be delayed from my covert investigation of Daisy's room, so agreed quickly and hurried past. I'd barely gone 10 yards when I was almost knocked off my feet by the burly form of Keiki barreling around the corner straight into me.
Watch where you're going!
I yelled.
What? Sorry! Just gotta get somewhere! Sorry!
He yelled back, barely breaking stride. I assumed he was on the way to the stage area, as surely he'd be needed in the rehearsals for lifting the scenery in and out. But at that moment, I wasn't interested in anyone's whereabouts, so long as where they were about wasn't where I was about to be. Namely, Daisy's dressing room. I knocked on the door to confirm no one was in, and then turned the handle and swung the door open, stepping through quickly and shutting it so swiftly behind me I caught myself a glancing blow on the bottom.
Oh!
I began to search, using my hands and my eyes to rummage through drawers filled with well-wishes and even, blushingly, through some piles of clothing. Any noise from my activity was muffled by the sound of the rehearsal coming through the tannoy system, but I couldn't find a thing. I was about to call the whole thing a bust and leave when a thought occurred to me. I took hold of the nearest bunch of flowers by their stems and carefully lifted them out of their vase.
Bingo!
Nestled in at the bottom of the vase, submerged in the water, were the earrings and choker. A quick inspection of the other vases revealed the three missing rings too. I was in two minds as to what I should do. Was it better for me to leave the jewels where they were so they could be discovered in situ, as it were, thus removing any doubt as to who the thief was, or should I fish them out of their watery homes like expensive shellfish and proudly present them back at the club to old Rawlins? As I was weighing up which of the above methods would convey the most glory onto the bonds of your humble hero, a third option presented itself by way of the tannoy system. I heard Michael Barrington call out,
"Stop, stop, stop. That isn't right, is it, Daisy? No, stop. Don't try again. Just stay right where you are. Right where you are. Where's Marlena? I'll get Marlena to show you. Oh, Mr. Rawlins, didn't realise you were in. Would you like to see how the work's coming along? I can reset to the top of the movement."
No. As you were, as you were. I just like to pop in when I can and see what my money's paying for. A joke, a little joke.
Rawlins was in the building. I could combine both my approaches and lead him to the discovery himself. That will be sure to add a zero to my fee and another helping of stuffing at the club's Christmas shindig, so I hurried to the stage area. As I burst through the door, which separated the dingy backstage from the glamour of front of house, all eyes turned to me expectantly.
"Artridge, did you see?"
shouted Rawlins.
"This can't be,"
cried out Chaz in anguish.
Dad, oh dearie me,"
screamed Dot, whose head I could just see over the chairs in the stalls next to Rawlins.
"Oh my Christ,"
muttered Rudy, more Ronald than Rudy, but thankfully abandoning the rhyming scheme the group appeared to have fallen into. Mr. Barrington, the director, simply stood with one hand covering his mouth and the other stretched out across the stage. His chorus line all mirrored the pose exactly.
"What on earth's going on?"
I asked.
"A sandbag just fell and crushed Daisy,"
Rudy blurted out.
"She's dead!"
Crimes, Clues and Christmas is a New Old Friends production, part of the Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears podcast series, written and performed by Fergus Woods-Dunlop and Heather Westwell, with sound and music by Fred Riding. New Old Friends gratefully acknowledge the support of Arts Council England in making Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears.